On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I finish our discussion about the 2001-2002 New Jersey Nets. We talk about the conference finals and the NBA finals, all that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yeah, and they advanced to the conference finals. First time since 1983-1984 season that both conference finalists had missed the playoffs in the previous season, because the Celtics had also missed in the previous season. So a mashup of two rebounding teams from the previous year. One of them was going to go on to the finals. And Josh, this is sort of kind of a classic rivalry at this point, right? Like Nets Celtics, is that like, would you say that's your biggest team that you hate, maybe outside of the Knicks?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it was. I mean, this was, the Nets had a ton of matchups with the Celtics in the early 2000s. It was Pierce, it was Antoine Walker, and they were kind of just a two-man band that needed a lot more help going up against the Nets. And This was definitely a competitive series. The Nets were able to close it out on the road, which I think is super interesting, in Game 6 in Boston. But this was not a series that was won over easily. Kidd, in that deciding Game 6, shot the ball poorly, 6 of 18 from the field, but was able to have a triple-double and do enough for the Nets. And Richard Jefferson scoring 15 off the bench, I mean, that was a huge contribution for him at the time, because he wasn't someone that was a key cog in what they were doing. But yeah, I mean, this was really kind of another one of those rock-throwing contests between these two teams and what was entirely low-scoring playoffs for all these teams.
Yeah, and the Celtics were, like the Nets, a team known for their defense. That Richard Jefferson point is a good one, too, because, I mean, we talked about those missed free throws he had in the Indiana series, specifically in Game 5, and, like, for a rookie, especially one like taken like at the back end of the lottery, to kind of have the mental fortitude to like push through that huge mistake that almost cost them their season and to contribute later on in the playoffs is super key, and kind of shows why he was able to thrive as long as he did in the NBA eventually. This series was super, super interesting. Every game, just looking back through it, it kind of seemed like the Nets started off the first quarter like dominating, and then the Celtics would go on a run. The Nets cruised in Game 1, a triple-double for Kidd. Game 2, the Celtics really tightened it up defensively, and they won despite Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker combining to go 14 for 52 from the field in that game. Like you said, it was just like terrible offense, really, on both sides. The Nets went 16 straight possessions in Game 2 without a field goal at one point. So truly just like, Does anyone want to win this game? Does anyone want to make a shot at a certain point?
Yeah, and then Game 3, this is something that my roommate and I were talking about, because he was reminding me of this. The Celtics outscored the Nets by 25 points in the fourth quarter to win this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nets had a 26-point lead at one point.
Yeah, the Nets were dominating in cruise control. I think this might have set the record at the time for biggest comeback in a playoff game of all time.
It did.
Yeah.
And the
big Aaron Williams performance, who had 18 in that game off the bench.
They wasted the Aaron Williams game. Oh, my God.
The one Aaron Williams game this year.
Yeah, you know Aaron Williams is going to win you one. Yeah, and there's a quote from Paul Pierce after that Game 3. The Nets, like you said, they were up 21 going into the fourth quarter, outscored by 25, lose the game by 4. So the Celtics go up 2-1 in the series. They've taken home court advantage after they stole Game 2 in the series, and Pierce after Game 3 said, quote, "If I was on the other end of this, I would be hurting right now. I think this is a chance for us to gain momentum and take control of the series and not look back." The Celtics up 2-1 after Game 3. However, it was the Nets who took control of the series, because they won Games 4, 5, and 6, including, like you mentioned, 4 and 6 on the road in Boston. Just like an incredible gutsy effort to not only win those games on the road, but to do so after blowing such a huge lead in that first game in Boston.
Yeah, and also, one other thing about that Game 3 in Boston, mm-hmm. Kittle's kid combined 0 of 14 from threes.
Yikes. Oh my God, if this Nets team just had, like, two more shooters, like, not even, like, like good players, just like rotation guys you could throw in who could shoot. Like they could have been so much better offensively.
Yeah, they really need, like, I'm trying to think who they could have. I feel like they needed another like star level scorer type, because I'm looking at the roster, like the guys who are playing. There's no like huge weaknesses. Like, yes, you'd love to upgrade Todd McCullough and set shot Willie, Jason Collins. But like guys they had were solid contributors. Obviously, you'd wish Jefferson was kind of had maybe come around a year or two sooner, so he'd be farther along in his development as opposed to being a rookie. There were no weak holes. They just didn't have kind of the top end talent in a lot of these games when they lost.
Yeah, they had a ton of depth, but I wonder if they trade that Eddie Griffin pick that we mentioned earlier for someone who's maybe like more able to contribute now as opposed to RJ and Collins, who did contribute, but like definitely not as reliably maybe as like a veteran would have been. Maybe if that makes a difference at some point. But really, like they got to the finals anyway, so like it would have just been against the Lakers, who were kind of unstoppable at that point. But so game four of the Celtics series, Nets never trail. But they only win by 2 points, which is kind of crazy. Kidd at the end of the game is like pointing to the Celtics crowd and holding up two fingers on each hand, indicating it's 2-2. He said afterward, "I was tired of being humble." Interesting quote there. In that game, Paul Pierce was at the line with 1 second left. The Nets up by two. Pierce missed the first free throw, and then he missed the second intentionally. They couldn't put it back in. And the Nets wound up winning by those 2 points. And Kidd, again, just to point out, he drew three charges in just the fourth quarter of this game.
Yeah, listen, he was Mr. Intangible.
Truly, yeah.
His stats were skyrocketing.
If you swapped his charges drawn for threes made, maybe he would have been like an MVP level player as opposed to just like a all NBA guy.
Imagine that.
But yeah, the Nets hold on in game four thanks to Paul Pierce's choke. And then game five, the Nets again go up by 20, but the Celtics cut it down to one. And then the Nets go on a 20-1 run late in the game to push forward and win. And Paul Pierce, who was very confident, talking a lot to the media, there were like a ton of Paul Pierce quotes that I found when researching this, because in the regular season, in four games against the Nets, Pierce averaged 37 points per game. And then they kind of stifled him in this game, or in the series rather. And he said, "They're changing up the defense, throwing two or three guys at me when I drive." So they were definitely getting in his head, especially after that game five win, where if you're the Nets and you like build that big lead and then the Celtics cut it down to one after what happened in game three, like it's kind of hard not to be shaken. But the fact that this team just kind of like took it in stride and then went on a run of their own really like shows what they were made of, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it also, I mean, it shows that they had the experience level over Boston, because Boston, I mean, they had Paul Pierce, who's a great player, Antoine Walker, who was supremely talented, but both of those guys were really young. And they didn't have a ton of, they weren't as battle tested in the playoffs as a guy like Kidd, say what you will about him. And I think just his leadership was able to propel this Nets team when they probably did have the talent edge overall, but definitely another team that was less kind of less tough and didn't have that leadership could have easily succumbed to a 2-1 lead. Maybe a Deron Williams led team, I would argue, not have the same luck in this situation.
Yeah. Kidd, like I mentioned earlier, like he couldn't really get out of the second round in Phoenix, won just one playoff series there. But he came to the Nets at a time when there was really like a power vacuum in the Eastern Conference. This was still like the post MJ days. The Pacers, like I mentioned, were like kind of in a little bit of a dip in their good run. So there was kind of space for some team to like take the reins in this like early period. And that's kind of how the Nets made back-to-back finals appearances, despite, like we mentioned earlier, no one averaging 15 points a game on this team, which is still so insane. So then game six, they close it out. They were trailing at halftime of game six by 10. But a big third quarter push, they wound up winning by 8 in Boston in game six. Kidd, terrible shooting, like you said, but another triple-double. Keith Van Horn, the dagger three with 50 seconds left to put the Nets up by 6. The Nets utilized a 2-3 zone at stretches in the fourth quarter, which was maybe a preview of what Kenny Atkinson would throw out with the box and one recently for the Nets. And then another thing that I found that was just like could never happen now, or if it did, would just be like a huge thing. A Celtics fan dumped a beer on referee Steve Javy in frustration late in the fourth quarter. Just insane. There were just like no rules in society back then.
Crazy. I can't believe that was like, that was only 18 years ago.
Yeah. We were alive. We were around. You were maybe watching this game, Josh.
No.
People just dumping beers everywhere.
Oh, that's so cool.
So the Nets get through. They advance to the finals. Celtics head coach after the game said, I think they will win the finals about the Nets because I think they have as good of a point guard as I've ever seen. They got a tremendous bench and great starters. They're big, difficult team to prepare for. I think the West is in for a rude awakening. Unfortunately, they were not. They remained asleep on the Nets because we can talk about the finals now. The Nets do get swept by the Lakers, but a finals appearance for the Nets, the first in their NBA franchise's history.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a monumental moment. I'm just, did Jim O'Brien really say that?
Yes.
I can't get it. What the hell?
Yeah, it was really like kind of, I mean, I think it's one of those things where like you lose to a team and so you like kind of want to fluff them up to be like, oh yeah, like we were the second best team kind of thing, which they weren't. The Kings probably were the second best team year, but... Yeah, he said that the Nets going into the finals were 7-1, or the Lakers were 7-1 favorites rather. So like huge odds stacked against them. The Nets or the Lakers rather were going for a three-peat. Like it made no sense to predict that.
Yeah, I mean that's ridiculous. And also like you look at the season series, they split it 1-1. When Kobe was suspended in the game that the Nets lost, Shaq put up 40 points. In the game that the Nets were able to sneak out, Shaq did not dress. So
And the Nets had to mount like a huge comeback in that one win also. So it was not like they like dominated that game either.
Yeah, for sure. And that one game that Shaq did play, I think it was a sign of things to come because might have had the greatest playoff series of all time in this one. 36-12, 4 assists for good measure, 3 blocks a game. Like he was just eating up Todd McCullough and Jason Collins.
Yeah, he completely dominated. I was like looking through old stuff like a couple days ago, and I actually found, for some reason, I have the Lakers 2002 championship DVD. And then I was researching for this podcast, and I was like, oh, wait, I have that final series on DVD. So I looked at that. It had some good behind-the-scenes stuff. There's a nice clip of Charles Barkley before game one in the tunnel talking to Jason Kidd, saying, you make sure everybody has fun. This is the greatest show on earth, which I thought was a very nice, positive thing to say. But yeah, this was kind of close in that, like, other than game two, there weren't any blowouts. Like, the Nets were within, like, 6 points for games 1, 3, and 4. But it felt like the Lakers were just kind of toying with them. Like, they would get up big, the Nets would come back, and then with, like, 10 minutes or so left in the fourth quarter of every game, the Lakers were like, okay, let's just, like, flip the switch and kind of run away with things. And it was like you said, it was Shaq who was absolutely unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean, like Kobe had a great series, but it was literally just a two-man band, kind of just a much better version of Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker. And like the Nets just really had no answer for it. They were kind of just completely overmatched. Shaq, to his credit, you know, he was getting to the line 17 times a game.
Yeah, some of that was like hack a Shaq, but even still, like
hitting him at a respectable clip, 66%.
Yeah,
compared to where he was, that was huge. So I think the Nets were probably going in, Byron Scott saying, "Hey, listen, Shaq's whatever 50-55% free throw shooter," and he made them pay. I mean, not by hitting a great percentage, but enough to make it still a good proposition for the Lakers when he got fouled.
Yeah, and Byron Scott, who you mentioned, going against his former team, the former Showtime Laker, Byron Scott. But yeah, it felt like the Nets kind of like almost knew they weren't going to win, which would make sense, but it's like not the mindset you want to see in a team. Like Lucius Harris, after game one, said to Sports Illustrated, "We just dug ourselves a hole against the champions." Like even just like I know it's like a true statement, but I feel like you don't want to like call them the champs, like if you're going against them, kind of thing, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, and Byron Scott after Game two said too much Shaquille O'Neal. He's a monster. Jason Kidd said if there were 20,000 people here, you put them all on the floor, they wouldn't be able to stop him, about Shaq. It seemed like they just, especially after those first two games in LA, were just kind of like, okay, like enough. We're not going to win. It's fine.
I mean, the Lakers barely had to even break out Slava Medvedenko also.
The human victory cigar.
He was the OG human victory cigar. And yeah, I mean, Nets got 35 from Kmart in game four and still couldn't pull out a win.
Yeah, he was great in that game. And honestly, like games three and four, the Nets put up a good fight. They were battling. They were up in game three towards the end. They were leading by a couple points. And then in the DVD I was watching, they showed during the huddle, Kobe on the bench, Lakers down five with 10 minutes left, talking to the team, and he very calmly just says, we're battle tested, we know what we've got to do. And they kind of all put their hands in, and that was it. And then Kobe took over. Game three was the one game where it was really Kobe, not Shaq, who did the Nets in. He had 36 in that game, including some really tough mid-range shots.
Shaq only had 35 in that game.
Yeah. and again, Byron Scott, after game three, said Kobe's 23, 24 years old. He's got a lot more years left in this league to get better. That's the scary part. It just seemed like after every game, it would be like the Lakers go up, the Nets come back, then the Lakers close it out, and then some Nets player or coach is like, yeah, the Lakers, man, they're really good. It just kind of seemed like that happened four times.
Yeah, I mean, Nets were kind of the little engine that could, and they had a great run, but I think it wasn't in the cards for them to make this even a close series against the Lakers.
Yeah. They rallied in the fourth of game four. Kenyon Martin, like you mentioned, 35 points. They had the lead again with 10 minutes left, but Shaq too much down the stretch. The Lakers pull off the sweep. And yeah, I think despite like getting swept at the end and like losing, you know, only one team ends their season with a win in the playoffs. But I feel like this was like an extremely successful season for the Nets, obviously an extremely memorable one. That's why we're talking about it. And like, this is just like another case where like a season or even like a team doesn't have to like end in a title, or a team doesn't have to win a title to be super memorable and to be held in great esteem by its fans, especially like we talked about those 7 seconds or less Suns teams earlier, which never won a title or even made the finals, but are remembered super fondly. There's the Thunder more recently, which made the finals but did not win a title. Like, there's tons of teams like that, and the Nets unfortunately ran into one of the greatest teams of all time in those early 2000s Lakers, but still a great season, right, Josh?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I think the season exceeded all expectations. I think even though the Nets got swept and might have put a sour taste in some people's mouth, they are able to come back next year, make it to the finals again. You know, did they have a chance of winning against the Spurs? No, but they were at least able to extend it to six games. You left feeling that some of the young guys like Richard Jefferson could really blossom. Obviously still the first year of the kid experiment, and he's beginning to mesh even further with some of those guys out there. So this was really the beginning of a mini dynasty in the swamp in New Jersey.
Yeah, like I said, there was like a vacuum in the Eastern Conference, and the Nets definitely filled it. Yeah, this was like a super memorable team. Jason Kidd, second in MVP voting this season, really came like very close to being like the defining guy of this year. Like, he was second MVP voting, second in his team was second in the league. So a great season from him, especially. Definitely proved Jerry Colangelo and the Suns wrong for trading him. And yeah, it's a team that I think somewhat gets forgotten just because like that Lakers team was so, so good. And I think people remember the 01 Lakers, which went 15-1 in the playoffs, and kind of think that that's how it was every year. But the Lakers did have to grind, especially in 2000 and 2002. And even though this was a sweep, it was like one of the closer ones you could have.
Oxymoron, close sweep.
Yeah. yeah. Do you have anything else on this season, Josh?
You know, not a ton else. The one thing I do want to point out, though, is the lackluster attendance, 26 in attendance for the Nets.
Oh, my God.
I think, like you have a team, one, that's good, and two, fun to watch, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah.
I think it just goes to show that, you know, the New Jersey market really just put the Nets at a disadvantage. They were 23rd the season after. It was just hard to get people all the way out to Continental Airlines Arena.
Yeah, that's a shame that they're like fourth to last in attendance, and they're one of the three or so best teams in the league for a couple years in a row. Definitely tough, definitely a big part, I would say, of why they moved to Brooklyn, although I don't think attendance has been super great there either. So, you know.
It's still better. And
yeah.
They play club music. Isn't that cool?
We love it. Team hype.
We love that. We love that.
All right. Should we wrap up, Josh?
Yes, we shall. I hope everyone enjoyed this exercise. You can thank Marcus for the brilliant idea. Yeah, we'll come back.
Wasn't it your idea?
Was it?
You picked the year. I think I just had the general like look back idea.
Team effort then.
Yeah.
We'll be back and doing this for another year to relive the glory days of the Nets. Makes me happy. Hope everyone is out there staying safe. If you could subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast, it would be much appreciated. Rate us and review us. We would love to hear your feedback. Follow myself on Twitter at jmbass_. Marcus is much funnier and eloquent than I am. You can follow him at Marcus Bearhall. The podcast account is at Locked On Nets. And until next time, be well.
Bye.